Hey, New Life. This week, we are going to talk about forgiveness. Now, we all love to be forgiven. We love to think about God's forgiveness of us. We like it when other people forgive us. But that's actually not what we're going to be talking about this week. This week, we are going to be talking about Jesus's call upon us to forgive. Between the world of the Old Testament and the New Testament stands roughly 400 years of history. And we've talked a little bit about this before in our study, that Judaism underwent a transformation where we begin to have the emergence of a very humane spirit, a spirit that sees my relationship to God as directly connected to how I relate to other people. I would like to read for you today from an ancient Jewish source that dates to the early 2nd century BC. It's called the Book of Ben Sira. Now, it's not in our Bible, but it comes to us from the world of Jesus. Listen, if you will. Anger and wrath, these are abominations, yet a sinner holds on to them. The vengeful will face the Lord's vengeance, for he keeps a strict account of their sins. Forgive your neighbor the wrong he has done, and then your sins will be pardoned when you pray. Does anyone harbor anger against another and expect healing from the Lord? If one has no mercy toward another like himself, can he then seek pardon for his own sins? If a mere mortal harbors wrath, who will make an atoning sacrifice for his sins? Remember the end of your life and set enmity aside. Remember corruption and death and be true to the commandments. Remember the commandments and do not be angry with your neighbor. Remember the covenant of the Most High and overlook faults. The idea that is being expressed here in this work is that between me and God stands you. And if I want forgiveness from God, I need to be forgiving of others. This is what begins to emerge in the spirituality of ancient Judaism, the Judaism of Jesus. We find this throughout the teachings of Jesus. Jesus is going to say in the Beatitudes, "Blessed are those who show mercy, for they will receive mercy." He teaches his disciples to pray in the Lord's Prayer, "Forgive us as we have forgiven." At the conclusion of the Lord's Prayer in Matthew chapter 6, he is going to say, "For I tell you that if you forgive when others sin against you, then your heavenly Father will forgive you." In other words, between me and God stands you. If I want to receive God's forgiveness, I need to forgive you. If I want to treat you with judgment and vengeance, then I need to be ready to experience God's judgment and vengeance. How we treat others is a direct relationship with our own spirituality, with our relationship with God. In fact, we can even say it this way. The barometer of our relationship with God is how we treat others. And maybe one of the greatest ways that we can treat others is to forgive them. Jesus is going to use several parables to articulate three different aspects of his call to forgiveness. And I want to look at those with you briefly. But before we dive into these parables, I want to share with you one piece of information that's going to be important for us to understand them. Within the first century, people used the metaphor of debt to speak about sin. We see this, for example, in the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors. Debt was seen as a debt that was owed to someone, a debt that needed to be repaid. And this was the metaphor that Jesus and his contemporaries used to speak about sin. So whenever we find stories about debts and the forgiveness of debts, we need to understand that he's talking about the forgiveness of sin. In Matthew chapter 18, Peter is going to ask Jesus a question. Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven. To illustrate the magnitude of what he's saying, Jesus is actually then going to tell a little parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began the reckoning, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. This is a lifetime of money that is impossible to be repaid. But notice, he owes a debt to the king. And as he could not pay, his lord ordered him to be sold and his wife and children and all that he had and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees imploring him, Lord, have patience with me and I will pay you everything. Yet out of pity for him, the lord of that servant released him and forgave him of the debt. But that same servant, as he went out, came upon his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. That's 100 days' wages. And seizing him by the throat, he said, pay what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down and besought him, have patience with me and I will pay you. He refused and went and put him in prison till he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their lord all that had taken place. Then his lord summoned him and said to him, you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you besought me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I have had mercy on you? And in anger, his lord delivered him to the jailers till he should pay all of his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. The idea of this parable, the point of this parable, is this servant who had an insurmountable debt was forgiven out of mercy by his Lord. Yet he could not extend mercy and forgiveness to his fellow servant. And notice, because of his refusal to show mercy to his fellow, as had been shown to him, that ultimately he faced the judgment of the Lord. And Jesus's final statement, so also will my Father in heaven do to those of you who do not forgive. Forgiveness is not just about what God has done for us. Forgiveness is about what we show to others. Jesus will repeatedly say in the Gospels, be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. If we want God's mercy, we must be merciful to others. If we want to be forgiven, we must forgive. That's the point of this parable. But Jesus is going to frame the idea of forgiveness, again, dealing with our fellows a little bit differently in another parable, and let's look at that. We find it in Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 9. Here Jesus is going to tell a parable, and frankly, this is one of the more troubling parables we find him telling, because he is going to actually make the hero of the story an immoral, dishonest steward. Now, that's not something that we necessarily want to do when we're sharing the good news of God, but nevertheless, this is what Jesus does. And understand something culturally, often parable tellers like Jesus would make characters either amoral or immoral because it created a certain interest and rhetorical tension in the story that really captured the audience's attention. So let's look at this story that Jesus tells in Luke 16. He also said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a steward, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. And he called him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.'" In other words, he is being called and summoned to give account of his behavior with the threat of being judged. "And the steward said to himself, 'What shall I do since my master is taking the stewardship away from me? I am not strong enough to dig. I am ashamed to beg, and I have decided what to do so that people may receive me into their houses when I am put out of the stewardship.'" In other words, I don't have the desire or the skills to do anything else. So I've got to figure out what I can do so that people will receive me. "So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?'" Now notice something. We're talking again about debts. And as we've said, debt means sin. But what is the debt owed? Or I should say, to whom is the debt owed? The debt is owed to the master. Pay attention to this. "He said, 100 measures of oil. He said, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill, write 80. The master commended the dishonest steward for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of or from unrighteous mammon, so that when it fails, they may receive you, or you may be received into eternal habitations." What is going on? Let's think about this for a minute. This individual, this steward, was getting ready to be called to give account before his master of his misdeeds. Knowing that he's facing his master in such a capacity, knowing that he needs to find a landing place outside of his master's employment, he goes to his master's debtors, those who owe a debt to the master, and he starts to forgive them. What is Jesus talking about here? Let me make a suggestion to you. Jesus is talking about how we deal with those who have a debt of sin to God. You see, it's not just about forgiving those that owe us something. It's also how we treat those that have debts to God. Who did Jesus hang out with? Tax collectors, harlots, sinners. And this was a problem for some of the religious authorities of his day. In fact, the number one criticism of Jesus by the Pharisees is who he ate with, who he hung out with. And Jesus is going to rebut those criticisms by saying that it is not the healthy and the righteous who need a doctor, but those who are sick. How do you treat people that have a debt to God? And it's not just about having a debt that they're trying to absolve with God. Notice the individuals in this parable, they actually weren't seeking the resolution of their debt. This individual went to them and forgave part of their debt. How do we handle those around us? That's the point of this parable. It's interesting that Jesus also uses a phrase that the sons of this world deal more shrewdly than the sons of light. In the first century, we know of a group, a sect within Judaism that referred to themselves as the Sons of Light. This is the community that writes the world famous Dead Sea Scrolls. And they were an isolationist sect. In fact, they believed in a strict dualism. They divided the world between the Sons of Light themselves and the Sons of Darkness, everyone else. They understood the statement in Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself. Their neighbor was only the member of their isolated sect. Everyone else, they were hoping for God's judgment and vengeance upon. So much so that they wouldn't even enter into economic dealings with the Sons of Darkness, because they did not want to mingle the mammon or the money of righteousness with that of unrighteousness. Jesus is actually hitting against such a sectarian outlook that divides the world, us and them. And he's calling upon his disciples to be those who go and even offer God's mercy and forgiveness to the sinful. Is that something that we're doing? Are we looking for those opportunities in our life, in our world? They're out there. Where would Jesus be if he were here with us today? Who would he be around? Who would he be hanging out with? As we conclude today, I want to look at one final parable of Jesus on this issue of our call to forgive. This is a very famous parable, but like some of the parables of Jesus, we miss the point of this parable because we've misnamed it. We call it the parable of the prodigal son. We find it in Luke chapter 15. Why is this misnamed? Because the younger son, which we call the prodigal, is not actually the main character of the story. In fact, this is a parable about a father and his two sons. And as I'm going to suggest to you in a minute, the real call to action hinges on the older brother. And it's that figure that Jesus really intends for us to find ourselves in. So let's look at this parable. He said, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that falls to me. Understand culturally, this young man has just asked his father to die so that he can get what's coming to him. And in a culture of honor and shame, this was absolutely scandalous. Jesus' audience would have been shocked with the hubris of this young man. And he, the father, divided his living between them. Notice them. It's not just the younger son that receives his inheritance, but the older son received his as well. And the division of inheritance was not 50-50. Culturally, it went 2/3, 1/3, with the lion's share going to the older son. And by the way, the older son now, culturally, is the de facto head of the house. Now, the father can still preside over the house, but the one actually controlling the land and the property and the wealth is now the older son. And he has a cultural obligation to heal this rift created by the younger son's request for an early inheritance, and he does nothing. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had, took his journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in loose living. We hear often in Jewish parables about a person going off into a far country. This is talking about going and living among the Gentiles and living in Gentile ways. And when he had spent everything, a great famine arose in that country, and he began to be in want. So he went and he joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed the pigs. Now, Some of you that are maybe a little bit older, you remember the old Willie Nelson song, "Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys." Well, Jewish mamas sing, "Mamas, don't let your baby grow up to be pig farmers." This means, Jesus is saying, this individual has now gotten to the absolute lowest of the lows. And he would have gladly fed on the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, but I perish here with hunger?" Notice he has a mistaken view of his father. He sees his father as a master to a servant and not a father. "I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and he came to his father. But while he was yet at a distance, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and embraced and kissed him. And the son said to his father, 'I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet.'" That is telling that the father is accepting him back as a son and as an heir, not as a servant. Servants didn't wear shoes. "And bring the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and make merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to make merry." Now, often the way that we treat this parable is we stop reading there. The younger son who wanders off from the father and squanders his life, but yet comes back and he's embraced by this compassionate and loving father. And you know what? We find this very same parable of a wayward son who comes back to his father, told and retold many times within ancient Jewish parables. But Jesus is going to add something unique. And his unique addition, I think, is actually the main punch of the parable. Let's read on. "Now his elder son was in the field. And as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called to one of the servants and asked what this meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out to him." Now remember, who was the one responsible for trying to heal the family rift? It was the older brother, but he hadn't acted. Notice in the same way that the father went to the younger son upon his return, he also goes out to the older brother. The father is merciful to both children. He entreats him, but he answered and said, "Lo, these many years I have served you." Notice that the older son has the same mistaken idea about the father. He is a master to be served, not a merciful father who loves his children. "And I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a kid that I might make merry with my friends." Now pay attention here to the pronouns. "But when this son of yours came," doesn't say my brother. He says, "when your son came, who has devoured your living with harlots, you killed for him the fatted calf." Now watch how the father is going to flip this around. "And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to make merry and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.'" Notice Jesus leaves us hanging in tension. Does the older brother go into the house or does he stay in the field? Frankly, if this were being a movie and the movie ended where the parable ends, we would either demand our money back or hope really soon that the sequel would come out. But It's intentional because Jesus expects his audience to find themselves in the older brother. And the answer of what the older brother does is up to how you and I respond to the parable. Do we stay out in the field? Or do we go in? Do we recognize that even those who are wayward are our brothers? Do we hear the call to forgive? To show mercy as the Father has shown mercy? Jesus lived in a period of great turmoil, of great conflict. Judaism found itself in conflict with the Romans, but it also was in conflict within itself. And a lot of people were drawing the us versus them lines. And in that midst, Jesus of Nazareth steps and calls upon his listeners to remember that we are to forgive the way we have been forgiven by God. And if we do not show mercy the way that God has shown us mercy, at the end of the day, we will not receive mercy. At the same time, even those who are on the outskirts, the sinners, those who have debts between them and God, we have an obligation to forgive. And then finally, how do we see those who are wayward? Do we stay out in the field, upset at God's mercy? Or do we feel the call to forgive and enter into the house and celebrate?